sexually exploited women who have an opinion about legalizing, who believe in the abolition of prostitution, who don't necessarily, who have worked very hard to leave the so-called sex trade and have painstakingly eked out a life for themselves and are not willing to go back to being identified as prostituted women, but who definitely want to take part in the debate.
So it's kind of a Lone Ranger type organization. I mean, you're all wearing a bit of a mask. I mean, you're speaking, but you don't want to use the names that you're using now because of the stigma attached.
Yes, that's right. Like I said, many of us have worked very, very hard and for years, sometimes decades, to leave this behind, and that's where we wanted to stay.
So what are some of the issues that your organization, members of your organization, want to talk to the public about?
Well, we want to raise public awareness about prostitution and try and debunk the myth that prostitution is a fair exchange between two consenting adults, that it's a viable career opportunity, that it's simply a job like any other that needs to be better regulated. It's simply not so. We consider prostitution a form of sexual exploitation, a form of violence against women. We see it very much as part of a continuum of violence against women. We don't think of prostitution as separate from domestic violence or from sexual assault or rape or any of the other components of violence against women, but rather as a continuum of that violence.
So you're talking from personal experience, but I mean, what made it so bad?
What made prostitution so bad? Going back to my earlier point, which is an argument that's often used in the debate right now, that prostitution is a fair exchange of a service for money between two consenting adults, when in fact it's simply not so. Whenever there is a situation where a woman is paid for sexual services, there is a tremendous power imbalance. First of all, in our analysis of the group, we talk about prostitution as a system that stems from the fact that the wealth of the world is unequally distributed among gender lines. So I don't think that anyone would refute the fact that men have more money than women worldwide. That's simply a fact, right? So we see prostitution as something that offers something, money, that is primarily owned by women and is needed primarily owned by men and is primarily needed by women. So that fact alone creates a power imbalance right there. There are others, of course, the fact that the woman is there to serve the man, that it's about what he wants and what he requests, the fact that once the door is closed, it's up to him whether he's going to be a nice guy about it or a jerk about it, and how far he's willing to go to enforce what he wants. There's also a misconception that when the money is exchanged, that the service that is bought is sex, which is in fact not so. Our experience is that when men pay for sex, they're not in fact buying sex. They're paying for a limited amount of time, a period of time, a bubble, if you will, in which the normal laws of equality disappear. In that time, in that bubble, he has permission to treat this one woman as what I like to call a lesser human. He's not obligated to treat her as an equal. And we feel that as long as any man can have access to a period of time where he can treat a woman as a lesser human, then no woman is safe. The housewife that he goes back to, the daughter that he goes back to, is not safe if he has access to that.
So you're saying he's got a room in his brain where he's treating women badly, and he carries that with him everywhere?
Well, in fact, in our analysis, what we believe is true is that when a man buys a woman for sexual purposes, for sexual exploitation, again, what he's buying is the ability to have power over her, and to some extent he's enacting his thoughts about, you know, what he thinks about all women, really. But he doesn't have permission to treat all women like that. So he does have permission to treat this one woman like that.
So even the woman who is bought in prostitution is like the scapegoat for everything he's mad at all the other women about?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. In fact, I don't know who I'm quoting here, but there's a prominent feminist in an article wrote something once that resonated with me, which I think it's Andrea Dworkin, actually, who said that when a man is having sex with a woman that he's purchased sex from, it's not enough for him that he gives it to her. What he's doing is he's giving it to all the women that he's angry with, who have rejected him in the past, who in his view have somehow reduced his masculinity. He's enacting his vengeance upon any gains that feminists have made, et cetera, et cetera.
So, but, I mean, it's understandable why women who have been in prostitution would hate it and would like to see it abolished. But what about, I mean, doesn't it provide a service to the other people because he gets his anger out on you?
I'm glad you brought that up. That's, of course, another enormous myth that prostitution somehow lowers the rate of sexual assault and domestic violence in that it offers an outlet to men. Now, there's two things that are very wrong. Well, there's many things wrong with that, but two things in my mind that take the priority that are very wrong with that. First of all, in that statement, we are literally saying that we must reserve a certain group of women to take it for the rest of us, and that somehow that will make the rest of women safe, which is actually not true. In fact, in countries where prostitution is legal, it is a fact that sexual assault does not only go up, but that general attitudes towards women and just respect for women takes a plunge downward.
So enacting a bad attitude just reinforces it.
That's right.
So, but, I mean, this is not the way that Johns talk about it. Like, there's this sociologist at Simon Fraser University, John Lohman, who's like, I mean, he talks about it as if the women in prostitution that he has visited really love him and really want to offer this service, and, you know, that it's like a loving relationship between John and a woman who's enacting prostitution. What do you think?
Well, from my experience, and certainly from the experience of every single woman in our group, as well as every single ex-prostitute I've ever spoken to, that is not the case. Now, that having been said, I will willingly admit that when I was on the street and when I was prostituted, I would have argued the same thing to you. I think that analysis is something that is privileged in a way. I mean, by that in order, I've been out of the so-called sex trade for 20 years now. My analysis in hindsight is much sharper now, and it is because I literally have more choices in my life than I had back then. I can look back and see why back then I wanted to think of it as a fair exchange between two consenting adults. You know, I had two choices back then. I could think of myself as the proud and out prostitute, or I could be one of the walking wounded. And being prostituted is hard enough without having to walk around as one of the walking wounded. So, of course, I would choose some sort of pride. I would try to eke out some sort of pride for myself. But in hindsight, it was false pride. It really doesn't exist. It doesn't exist at all. You know, back then, I hung out with a group of prostituted women, and all of us, we called ourselves renegades, and we were so proud of the fact that none of us had a pimp, and that the money belonged to us, you know, and we would say things like, you know, no man owns me, and it's ridiculous. When I look back now, I realize that all men owned me.
They were owning you in bits and pieces.
That's right. And there were no pieces left for me.
So, do you try to communicate with women who are still engaging in prostitution acts? And if so, how do you communicate to them in a way that can allow them to accept a different analysis?
Well, my goal is not to, first of all, I just I started this group, I vowed actually that I would never fight with another prostituted woman. That is not the goal. And I'm very aware of the divisions, especially at street level, among sex trade workers, and those divisions have always existed. You know, when I was on the street, the divides were the same as they are now. I mean, the downtown women look down on the downtown east side women, the escort women look down on the street women, and the dancers are above all of us because, you know, they would never engage in prostitution. You know, and those divides are very false. We're talking about sexually exploited women, and we have so much more in common than divides us. But the division is created by those who have the power to maintain the status quo. Who wins when we're divided is not us. Who wins is those who gain from prostitution remaining as a profession, remaining in its place. And it's my goal to try and address some of those divisions, not by trying to convince women one by one, but by things like we have a broad definition of sexual exploitation in our group, so that it's not only ex-prostitutes who are welcome to join our group. Current prostitutes can join our group. Dancers can join our group. Women used in prostitution or in the film industry, the pornography film industry. And we even extend it to domestic workers who are forced to provide sexual services for their employer. So we see it as all a continuum of sexual exploitation, and we have so much more in common that divides us, and that seems to be enough. Women do join our group.
So now that you have the group, you have some aims. How are you working on your aims?
Well, our aim is to build solidarity among each other first, because we are each other's best allies. We are each other's best chance. And in talking together and in realizing how much we have in common, our analysis grows exponentially from there. Part of the result of that consciousness raising and analysis can be seen on our website at www.expals.org in the form of our statement against prostitution. We released a statement that addresses some of the major points that are being argued in favor of legalization maintaining the status quo anyways, and it's been very, very well received.
Now, you went in prostitution before, and you've been out for a while, and you say at the time that you went into it, you really didn't have other choices. But what about women today? How are they going to have any other choices?
Oh, I think it's actually even worse for women now. I'm not sure what the question is.
I guess, how can we make it so that women have other choices? I mean, it's very hard to criticize that choice is the only choice.
Certainly, and it's not my aim to criticize the choice. You know, one of the things that I say to people is, I know for a fact that I would have been able to exit sooner if even one person along the way had said to me, I think what's happening to you is wrong. I think it's outrageous. And you might find it hard to believe that not one person ever did. I had people say to me, where's your self-respect? You know, or what are you doing? Why don't you choose something else? But they were all kind of, you know, blaming things, right? Not one person ever turned it around to say, I think what is being done to you is really awful, and I am personally invested. Is there anything that I can do to help you get out? And in fact, I was able to succeed to get out once one person did say that to me and commit that, because it wasn't about then criticizing my choice. It really was about instilling a message of worth. You know, it wasn't until other people told me that I deserved better that I started to realize I deserved better.
Thank you very much. And again, the organization is Expals, E-X-P-A-L-S-S, and the website
www.expals.org.